It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here to Sunday morning. Wes Moss, your host here. Who's with me today? Luke Moss, raise his hand. Thank you. Krista Wheeler on phones. Good morning. Welcome to the 9 o'clock hour of Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. The top three things you need to know. Number one, Goldilocks. Goldilocks is back. And our Friday's jobs report, where we're going to get into here today. Number two, the best or the number one live long activity for retirees, and really just people, humans in general. Number three, stories from the financial front line. After the success of the story we published called Round the World Robin, we have two new financial stories that are meant for you to remember. The first one, about Tidy Up Tessa. The second one, about new whip, Whitney. And what is whip, by the way? This is one of these things that is this phrase, old but new, but old but new again. You'll find it in the Urban Dictionary, but if you were around in the 50s and you remember what people used to call vehicles or cars, they used to call them whips. And I actually looked up, why would you on earth call a car a whip? By the way, Luke Moss here, he is nine. He did not know that people called whips cars. The answer is that back when they first invented cars, it was the new replacement, brand new replacement for a horse and a buggy. And when you had a horse and a buggy, you used a kind of a whip to spur on the horse and buggy or make it turn. And the next iteration of that was a steering wheel. So they used to call the steering wheel of a vehicle a whip, as it controlled the car, as an actual whip used to control the horse and the buggy or the drawn carriage. And that's why for now, call it almost 100 years or probably more, they've been calling cars whips. It was big, then it went away. Big, Luke is giving me the rolling of eyes. Okay. But anyway, I needed some alliteration. I needed to rhyme. So we called the story. Her name is Wendy. We'll talk about the story a little later today. It's a true story. It's one of my colleagues at work. Her name is Whitney. And to remember the story, we will now refer to her as new whip Whitney. But first, Goldilocks is back. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. How did we do this week? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But I think the most important piece of the equation has to do with what this economy, this jobs report that came out on Friday, did so much to bring back our favorite fairy tale, an economic parable, and I'm going to explain that. And it's, of course, about Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I'm going to explain that in just a minute. For the week, Dow Jones up 1.9%, year-to-date up 13%. S&P 500 up 2% this past week, up 15% year-to-date. So out of the gates, very strong year so far in 2019. So we'll go back to, and I'm going to explain this story. Why is Goldilocks our favorite fairy tale character? She's back on the scene. Once again, Goldilocks is the poster child for the U.S. economy. It's from the 19th century British fairy tale. Goldilocks and the three of these cutest bears and one very curious but lucky little girl named Goldilocks. And again, I have four kids. Yeah, probably read them, I don't know how many books, but Goldilocks is always one of them. They've all read it probably 10 times. You know the story. But why is it such an economic parable? Why is it so related back to the economy? It's more than just the whole just right piece of the equation. I'm going to get to that in a minute. We all know the story. As a refresher, though, Goldilocks, remember, she's wandering through the forest and she stumbles upon a home. And when nobody answers the door, she kind of just meanders in the house. And then she's overtaken by this smell of porridge. And she comes across three bowls, which she samples. The first bowl, and by the way, it's this porridge. The first one is too hot. The second one is too cold. But the third one is just right. So she eats it. Eventually, she gets sleepy. as the story goes on. And upon finding a place to sleep, she picks the bed that is, again, not too soft, not too hard, but the one that is kind of right in the middle or just right. And that's where Goldilocks falls asleep. While she's sleeping, the bears come home and they find her asleep. And before something bad happens, by the way, would you want to be sleeping when three hungry bears walk in the house and they notice their porridge is missing, yet they see a little girl asleep in a bed? Well, before something bad happens, Goldilocks pops up, escapes out the window safely back into the woods. That's the story of Goldilocks and the three bears. So it's a perfect story for children, of course. And it teaches, one, breaking and entering is bad, right? Especially if the house is occupied by grizzly bears. Number two, you don't eat other people's food. You don't use other people's beds. Or you could get, again, eaten by a bear. And three, it's always important to find a happy medium option. And happy medium options seem to be a good idea. And of course, if something isn't right, as a child, you learn to figure something out that maybe is a little bit better. Something is too expensive or too cheap or too extreme. Find another option until it's just right. So extremes in either direction aren't necessarily a good thing. That's just some of what Goldilocks or the story teaches us. Now, in the case of economics, the study that I love, even though last week we went on a tirade about how economists at the International Monetary Fund are typically very wrong about predicting recessions because, again, it's so difficult. But in the case of economics, the Goldilocks economy has many of these same storylines. Well, what's the Goldilocks economy? Number one, hot data, really awesome economic data, isn't necessarily good. Like porridge, it's way too hot. It's not good for you. Same thing with economic data. We don't want a 0% unemployment rate. We'd have no workers left to fill any jobs. We'd have no unemployed. The economy would overheat. It would be great for a little while, and then we would crash. So hot data isn't necessarily good. Good data, again, not great, not too hot, that's more sustainable. So number two, we want good data, not great data. So an economy that is too hot and not too cold can keep plowing ground. We don't want an economy that's in the freezer. We don't want an economy that's boiling hot. We want it kind of somewhere in the middle so it can keep plodding along, staying in a good place for a longer period of time. That's what a Goldilocks economy refers to. And that's why this is such a great analogy to, it's a story that means a lot, but really in economics, it's exactly where we want to be. And by the way, we have seen a return of Goldilocks. Friday's jobs report was a big flashing headlights that Goldilocks is back. Goldilocks is back, coming to theaters near you this April, because that's what the economy looks like right now. Number three, what do we learn from this story, this fairy tale? Avoiding economic danger is obviously what the Fed or the Federal Reserve is trying to do. So most importantly, Goldilocks, in the story, she escapes danger. There's more to this story just about porridge, testing porridge and the right chair to sit in and the right bed to sleep in. There's something a little bit scary about this as a fairy tale. She could get eaten by the bears. By the way, also a pretty good market analogy. Goldilocks escapes that, though. She escapes danger. A hungry bear might eat you, just like bear markets or recessions. This is why it's the primary role of the Federal Reserve to try to protect us from that. They can't do it all of the time, but they can keep us in this kind of center Goldilocks lane as long as they possibly can. And that's kind of where we are right now. Inflation now. Fed wants it at 2%. We're just below 2%. So we're not overheating. That's good. We want stable employment. That's about where we are right now after the jobs report. It's not zero unemployment. It's not 100% employed, but it's a low unemployment rate that we can continue to plot along with for a more sustained period of time. So we're not getting record growth, but we're getting right now sustainable growth. And it takes this steady, not too hot, not too cold. That's where we want economic data. By the way, speaking of economic data, congratulations to who? Herman Cain, right here, WSB Radio. I had many a great time with Herman Cain, many a radio show with Herman, who's been a big supporter of me here on WSB Radio. And I was a big supporter of Herman Cain in a lot of ways. But congratulations to Herman Cain. President Trump said on Thursday he intends to nominate Herman Cain. You'll read about him as former GOP presidential candidate. I remember him as former host of the Herman Cain Show right here on WSB Radio. God bless you, Herman Cain. So what has brought back this return to Goldilocks? Why are we back here? The Friday jobs report did a lot to do that. First of all, we gained 196,000 new jobs for the month. Just reported this past Friday, first Friday in the month of April, of course, looking back into March. So the March job numbers, almost 200,000, which is where we want to be right now for an economy our size. That followed a really dismal month, though, and this is why people are getting really nervous. Wait a minute. In February, the first report, and this got revised a little higher, but the first report in February was that we only added 20,000 jobs. That's not enough. If we added 20,000 jobs and 20,000 jobs and lost 10,000 jobs, that's too cold, and that's not an economy that looks like it is plowing forward. That's the kind of looks like it's kind of screeching to a halt. So there was a little nervousness around the prior month. So February, you said we only added 20,000 jobs in an economy of 350, 60 million people. That's not enough. So we kind of roared back in the month of March with 196,000 new jobs and revised February higher a little bit, not 20, but 33,000, a little better, but still not great. March, though, a very different story. What else happened? Well, the work week, you get a lot of data that comes out of these jobs reports. The work week rose slightly. The unemployment rate held steady at 3.8%. Wage growth, which we know is the black widow of economic data, when that gets too hot, we go into recession. That moderated to 3.2% year over year. That's a good place for it to be. The labor force participation rate holding very steady, right around the 63% level. That, again, think about the words I just used there. Rose slightly, held steady, moderated. All Goldilocks words on arguably the most important, impactful economic set of data that we get, the jobs report. We also saw other data that was starting to get too cold, moderate a bit as well. Mortgage applications, housing data, we'll go into that when Money Matters returns. We're going to do weather, traffic. Then we're going to come back. We're going to take your phone calls, questions, talking about the Goldilocks economy right here on Money Matters. Stay tuned. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Really, we're going to talk about a little happy retiree advice. We just talked about Goldilocks economy. We'll talk more about the economy here today on Money Matters. And if you miss Money Matters, you can, of course, find the podcast pretty much anywhere, Spotify, iTunes. Just look for Wes Moss at Money Matters, and you can find if you missed today, rewind, fast forward. Pretty easy way to do it. But it's more fun to listen live and listen to live calls. So thank you for being part of the show. We're going to do calls at the bottom of the half hour, but second on my list here today is number one, top three things you need to know. One, Goldilocks is back because of the Friday's job report. Number two, the number one live long activity for retirees. What is it? Well, there's a new epidemiological study of 80,000 folks. It looks like this. Well, they're Danish folks. 80,000. This is a long study. It was almost three decades of studying individuals and looking at lifespan. And habits that led to longer and shorter lives. Not interestingly, they looked at racket sports. So think about tennis. Think about anything that's racket oriented. So tennis, let's call it. Let's call it pickleball too. We can throw that in there. Luke thinks you should throw badminton in too. He's just shaking his head no. Racket sports, of course, you live longer than sedentary lives. Duh, we know that, right? Also, though, longer than other exercises. So interestingly, and this is where it gets a little interesting, Racket sports, you live longer relative to running, or if you're a jogger or a walker or a swimmer or even cycling. Those could be a little more isolated sports. You can run on your own. You can jog on your own. You can walk on your own. Certainly, you're going to be swimming on your own. Cycling, same thing. You could do that with a group, though. But it raised the question about the social interaction of the activities you choose to do. We know you've got to exercise. We know you have to eat right. And we obviously have heard this as well. But think about this now empirically, that we take both exercise and socialization, which you have to do when you play racket sport. You can't play tennis on your own. Can't play pickleball on your own. But you put those two together, and that social interaction along with exercise creates dramatic longevity results. Dramatic longevity results. Again, this study, 80,000 people we looked at, or this study looked at, 80,000 folks, 8,600 of them over 25 years, this is the group with the best longevity. So relative to the control group, if you were a cycler, you live 3.7 years longer than the control group. So just exercise alone really worked for longevity. It was awesome. Great. Cycling in shape added 3.7 years on average to life. That's a huge number. Running added 3.2 years on average to life. Again, pretty awesome to be able to squeeze an extra 3 years out of life here on this planet. But tennis as a sport, how much did that add to life and longevity? And I can tell you, if you're a tennis player, you're sitting here, you may have heard this, but if not, listen up for a second, because I don't want you to ever stop playing tennis, because it adds almost a decade to your life expectancy out of this group. 8,600 folks that were in this over a 25-year study. Tennis added, on average, 9.7 years to life. Think about that. And that's a magical number. Nobody's selling tennis as a magical elixir. I don't see those commercials. I don't see a Cellgenix commercials about playing tennis. I usually see a commercial about some sort of bottle or pill or supplement that'll take you an extra year, 5 years, 10 years. Forget it. Just go play tennis. It's that easy. I got to get my tennis racket out. It's getting dusty. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. When we come back, we're talking about this economy. We have stories from the financial frontline. Tidy up Tessa. New whip Whippy. It's all coming up straight ahead on Money Matters right here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Wes Moss, your host, here to take calls and questions. Talking about Goldilocks today, for goodness sakes. It's almost like Storytelling Sunday. I have so many financial stories to tell today. Helps us understand the economy. But first, let's open up the phone lines and take some calls here on a Sunday morning. And I went through a couple of what questions we've gotten in the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, to give you an example of what you might want to call about here on a Sunday morning. So if you're riding along and listening to Money Matters and you had a question maybe kind of bugging you this week, it's stuck in your head, you haven't gotten an answer on, maybe you and your spouse have been talking about something back and forth, I'm here to just weigh in, maybe give you another opinion, third-party objective opinion to steer you all in the right direction perhaps. And we can do that here on Sunday morning. That's what we love to do. So if you're riding around or maybe just sitting at home or wherever you might be, stuck in Atlanta traffic, there shouldn't be a ton here, though, on Sunday morning. We're happy to take your call. So phone lines are open. The number is 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750. So what may you be thinking about? Or here's some examples of questions that we've been getting. How do you save money after tax beyond your 401k? How do you allocate your thrift savings plan? if you're TSP. Taxation, what are the difference between the different tax buckets you have, qualified dividends versus an IRA versus an after-tax account? How do you structure that in retirement? What do you do with a big chunk of money that you just came into, 100 grand, 500 grand? I don't know what the number is, a windfall. How about a deferred comp? How about a deferred comp plan? Maybe is that different than your 401k? A Roth question. Hey, I have money sitting in the bank in cash. I don't know what to do with it right now. Maybe it's a special needs trust. Maybe it's an annuity question. The one financial question that I've weighed in a ton on over the last couple of years, particularly the last year or two, as there are more and more corporate restructurings and surplusing, whatever they like to call it, where they're pushing folks out, but you're faced with a decision between taking a lump sum of money from your employer versus a monthly pension amount. Which one's a better deal for you, the monthly or the big lump sum? And then how do you turn that into a pension? So lump sum versus pension. How about a question about the present or future value of something that you're looking at? Should you be able to spend money on, hey, a big trip or a big set of somethings? Where do you pull the money from? What's the most tax-efficient way to pull that money? Maybe you're setting up a 401k or setting up a if you're a small business owner, a SEP IRA. What direction makes the most sense for you at any given time? All ideas of things we're covering here on Money Matters from live callers. It's the fun part of the show, and we're happy to do that here on a Sunday morning. The number here in the studio, give us a call, 404-872-0750 is the number. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 1-800-WSB-TALK. So let's see, where am I headed here on the phones? Crystal Wheeler, we've got some calls now. Okay, I'm going to start with line two. We're going to Grayson. Robert from Grayson, Georgia. Robert, what's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I have a question related to Roth investing. Roughly, I'm age 61. 90% of what I have is in retirement accounts. 10% is in non-retirement. And at this point, is it worth considering putting into a Roth or holding off and just putting into non-retirement accounts?
Let me ask you a couple quick questions. How old are you?
Sure. 61.
So you're in the stage where you can do more into a Roth. So right now the max contribution is $6,000 in 2019. So you can put up to $6,000 into a Roth. But you could also do you have a 401k at your work?
Yes, yes.
And your income around is approximately 60?
My income is over six figures.
Oh, it is. Well, first thing, remember, you got to be careful about if you're married, filing jointly. So if you and your spouse are making, the danger level here on whether you're allowed to do a Roth is above 193,000. So 193 to 203, basically. And if you're at 203,000 or more, you just can't do it.
Yeah, and I'm well under that.
You're under that. So you're kind of in that sweet spot where you have plenty of income to be saving, but then you've got, but you're under the 193. Usually the answer is yes. If you can do it, if you can do a Roth contribution, the bad news is, or the downside of it is, you don't get a current year any sort of deduction. It's a non-deductible contribution.
Right.
So you put your $6,000 in, and you don't get to deduct that off your taxes. And if you have a regular IRA, most of the time, if you're covered by, in your case with your income, I can tell you, you wouldn't be able to get a deduction anyway, because if you're making over a certain amount of income and you've got a 401k at your employer, the IRS is not going to typically allow you to get a deduction anyway for a regular IRA contribution. That's why for so many folks in your particular situation, this is really exactly where the Roth is not only your best option, but it's a good option no matter what. Because again, as you know, that money, even though you don't get a deduction on it, it grows tax-free. Free, free, free.
I'm looking at it more for long term, but it also might possibly be, an emergency type situation that would take it out. And I know there's some type of a 5-year rule on taking. I think you can take out your contributions, but you can't take out the gains for 5 years.
Well, right. So let's say you put, you know, let's say you have $6,000 inside a Roth, it doubles to $12,000. If you needed to take it early, you can take the basis out because, again, you didn't get any deduction for it. Mm-hmm. But if you take out the gains before 5 years, or you also have to be 59 and a half, you're going to have that whole 10% penalty apply to you. Okay. So as long as, and you're, how old are you now again?
61.
Okay. So my thought would be, look, if this is a long-term asset for you, and it's one of many buckets, and you probably have some 401k money, you've got now, you'll have Roth money and some after-tax money. Think of this as your longest term bucket, because it's really kind of the most valuable piece of the equation you have. It's the only thing we have that you can have money double, triple, quadruple, and when you take it out, you have no taxes on it. Now, yes, you've got some parameters. We've got to give it a little bit of time. And or else you're going to get penalized to do it. But it sounds like you certainly have the time. And from what I can tell, absolutely. I would be doing a Roth contribution here, knowing that this is an asset that is going to be, it's going to grow tax deferred. And ultimately, when you use it, it's going to be tax free over the long run. It's a wonderful asset to be able to use. Thank you, Robert, for the call from Grayson. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll go to, now where are we headed? We're headed to Rick, who joins us from Douglasville. Rick, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. I'm a retired air traffic controller from the FAA, and during my time, since I was CSRS employee, I paid no money into Social Security during that time. And I'm just starting to see that the WEP, the windfall elimination provision, might be a little bit more abusive than I thought all these years. I just never looked into it.
Yeah, it could get, it's pretty abusive. And what Rick is talking about here is that if you were in something what's called a non-covered pension, if you will, meaning that you didn't pay into Social Security. So those would have been, let's say you were in the government for a lot of years, and you're not paying into Social Security in some of those jobs, then, and you're going to get a pension from some of those jobs, right? There is a provision called the windfall elimination provision that'll say that if you don't have a full 30 years of covered employment where you are paying into Social Security, they're gonna reduce what your normal or full benefits would be by a certain amount. And if you look at this chart on, like, how many years, let me ask you this, Rick, how many years do you think you have of covered where you were also paying into Social Security?
About 15.
All right. Well, the chart, and how many years do you have left? How old are you and how many years do you think you'll be working?
I'm 61 and I retired at 48 from air traffic control, but I ended up kind of right back in it. And I'm thinking about 3 or 4 more years is all that I have left.
So with air traffic control, you're paying into Social Security now. So that's correct.
I am.
Yeah. So you're gonna get to, let's say you have another 5 or 6 years. By the way, we need all the air traffic controllers we can get. I don't know if you're allowed to retire, Rick.
Well, they actually force you out at 56, but there are contract towers all over the nation that are small, and they hire worn-out air traffic controllers to run them.
what a wonderful thought. Let's get the worn-out guys to be doing this group. What is it just with, is it what, for smaller planes? It's a little less stressful, or how?
Smaller airports.
Smaller airports.
Charlie Brown Airport is an example.
Got it. Okay. Okay. And Petrie to Cab, that's what we're talking about, right?
No, PDK is still FAA because they're the second busiest airport in Georgia.
But Charlie Brown is where you're talking about.
Yes, well, it's Blitz.
Well, it doesn't sound like you're worn out, and I feel like we need all the air traffic controllers we can possibly get in the United States of America. So stay with us and keep working. But back to your question, yeah, you're right. If you look at that, it's the WEP. It's, again, called the Windfall Elimination Provision. Effectively, we'll say if you have less than 20 years or less, really, anything less than 30 years of coverage, you may be dinged on the annual amount that you are receiving from what you normally would get from Social Security. So if you look at this chart, you know, again, if you, the further you go higher on years of earning, so if you're at year 30 and you've done a full 30 years of covered employment where you're paying to Social Security, you're not going to get hit by WEP. But right. at 29 years, it's very minimal. At 28 years, it's still really, really small. However, if you're in the 20-year bracket, which you're still not even there yet, you're at around 15, anything that's 20, really, anything that's less than 30, you're going to get hit, but they're really small numbers. But when you get to 20, they can get pretty hefty. And I'm looking at this chart here from the Social Security Administration. If you do the WEP calculation, which is a little too complicated just to do on air, but right. I see folks get dinged anywhere from, let's call it $100 off of what their normal benefit would be, all the way to, really looks like the max right now is about $463, which is a really big hit to what your Social Security would typically be. But again, that is part of this provision. And it's something that if you're in this same scenario as Rick, and thank you for your call, Rick, keep us safe in the air, my friend. You need to really do the math on what could be a pretty big chunk out of your Social Security earnings. It's called the windfall elimination provision. If you've been in government work and not paid into Social Security for a bunch of years, and you've got and then you have a pension coming to you, or you've got benefits coming to you, Social Security benefits rather, you could get a big chunk of what you normally would be getting taken away. It's called the windfall elimination provision. So you've got to do the math as you're doing your financial planning in order to be prepared. Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Thank you, Rick, for your call. We'll go back to the phones here in the 10 o'clock hour. So hang on. Stay tuned. More Money Matters, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750 for your calls and your questions. If you don't get through right now, we're going to go to the phones in the 10 o'clock hour as well. With that, let's go to Marty in Chamblee. Marty, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
Wanted to ask you about taking money out of retirement funds, IRAs, equity funds, and Roth IRAs. And also wanted to ask you about charitable deductions on your RMD.
All right, so a couple of thoughts here. There are a lot of different ways to do this. My question to you, are you already in the RMD phase, the required minimum distribution phase?
All right, I am.
And about how much you have to take in a given year now?
It's around 15.
Around 15,000. Okay. Well, so again, what we're referring to here, what Marty's asking about is that when you get to 70 and a half, you're forced to take money out of your IRA, a traditional IRA. You don't have to do this to a Roth, but if you're pulling out your IRA, then it's probably around 400,000, correct?
Yes.
And 3.7% of that, which is your RMD amount in your first year, and it goes a little higher than that over time, but call it 15K a year. Is that all you need to take out, or do you look at some of the other assets and say, hey, I need another 10 or 15 from my other assets in order, just normal spending?
No, don't need it for normal spending at this point, just for extras.
Well, okay, but it does. So beyond the 15, do you need the 15 for just extras, or is that part of your budget and then you need additional money from some of the other accounts?
No, it's not part of the budget.
Well, then really there's so many different ways to look at this. I mean, really, if you look, when you get into retirement, you're in what's called the distribution phase. And I think that you always want to do this in the least tax harmful way. And the least tax harmful way is to Only pull out what you have to from an IRA because that counts as ordinary income. That's at your highest tax rate. And then the rest of it, again, you don't have to take money out of a Roth. So we just had a question about that. That's why that's a longer term asset you can let go until just let it go and let it go. You don't have to take anything. And then I'm a big believer, and we need to talk about these proposed legislative changes about unrealized capital gains, but your regular after-tax brokerage money can serve as a really, really good way to pull money out without having to take a bunch of taxes. You can take away effectively principal, pay yourself back in principal or something that's even at a loss so that you don't have ordinary income at all. That's the way to really structure that and do that when you get into retirement. Some proposed changes from these senators and Congress people coming up at 10 o'clock hour. Stay tuned. Money Matters straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters here. Your host, Wes Moss. You know, we were just talking about, well, first of all, if you're just tuning in to the 10 o'clock hour today, we've talked about what are our top three things we need to know here on Money Matters on this Sunday morning as we are in April post jobs report, where we got the most Goldilocks of Goldilocks job reports or economic reports. So we talked about Goldilocks is back. If you missed why it's such an important analogy to the economy, why it's such an important parable to what's happening right now, this not too hot, not too cold, escaping recession, escaping grizzly bears, why the story is so important. If you missed that in the first hour, you can go to the podcast, Wes Moss Money Matters, on Spotify or on iTunes, and you could skip through it that way and, of course, subscribe. The next thought here, we talked about the number one, live long, number two, top three things you need to know, the number one, live long activity for retirees. That story is pretty remarkable. It was a study that was published just a few months back that shows that we know activity works for longevity. We know that being active and moving and being healthy, of course, in retirement adds to longevity on average. But the number one activity of all the things we've talked about, whether it's golf or running or biking or hiking or swimming or dancing, whatever it might be in retirement, where do we land? What gives you almost a decade of proposed or potential new longevity? Luke Moss here in the studio is raising his hand. I know you've been here. It's tennis, because it's not only a healthy, active sport, but it's a very social sport. You can swim on your own. You can bike on your own. You can run on your own. You can walk on your own. You can't play tennis on your own. You've got to do it in a social way. Typically, you're playing doubles, and you're playing with three other folks. Automatically social, automatically physical, automatically exercise. And in a study of 80,000 men and women, tennis added the most to longevity of all the other activities you could possibly do. Yes, running and swimming and biking all added a couple of years to longevity. A couple of years, 3 years, 4 years. Tennis added 9.7, almost a decade of extra life because of all the benefits that you get. In fact, I've laid out my website. This is a story I'll tell here. I've actually laid out wesmoss.com in some respect to these very core principles that help happy retirees have a better, happier, more fruitful life with longevity. And I think it's because I've been thinking about this as a little kid. I guess we all do. It's just human nature. We want to live long. We want to be healthy. And as a little kid, I remember starting maybe when I was like 5 or 6. Bedtime prayer. One of the things I would pray for would be longevity. Longevity to all those I know and love. It's one of the things I've thought about as like 5-year-old. And I'm now in my 40s, and I still think about it, and I've laid out my website. WesMoss.com, and that's part of it. Now, I don't have a longevity tab, but of course, it's the underlying theme. The tabs under the news tab I've laid out, the acronym is MASH, M-A-S-H, but it's money. Of course, you got to get that right. Happy retirees have a certain checkpoints they get to be able to kind of do the things they want to do and not worry about money. So the financial checkpoint, I think, is extraordinarily important. Number two, the second area, A for adventure. So this is MASH acronym. And this is actually, I have a couple podcasts coming up and radio shows that are going to be focusing on the happy retiree. What are the things we can do in pre-retiree life in our 40s and our 50s and our 60s to gear up to be a happy retiree? Well, of course, the money piece. The next is adventure. The third is social, the S, and the fourth is health. So MASH, money, adventure, social, and health. And I have several Money Matters special updates or podcasts coming up, and we'll play this on radio as well, that focus in. The guests that I'm going to have are some of the I would say arguably the most famous chef in Atlanta. I'm not going to tell you his name at this point. I'm going to keep this a secret until we release it. The author of arguably the most big time author in the last decade that has to do with health and wellness and diet here on the show. And these are some of the areas that we're going to be covering to talk about helping families and retirees live a better, more fruitful, healthier retirement. Money, adventure, success, health, or I'm sorry, money, adventure, social, and health, which is exactly the tennis story that I just talked about here. They have so much of those apply. The number in the studio, by the way, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. If you want to give us a phone call, happy to answer your questions about any of the above, money, adventure, social, health, but really anything that's money oriented, we will cover here live. And I'm about to go into some stories here. The third, by the way, three things you need to know after Goldilocks, after number one, lifelong activity, you need to live long activity. Number three, stories from the financial front line. I'm going to tell you the story of Tidy Up Tessa and new whip Whitney here, which you can also find on WesMoss.com. I'm going to get into that here in just a minute. We did just have a phone call, though, asking about as I'm kind of jumping all over the place, for goodness sakes, what do you call in here about? I'm going to talk about a phone call we just had in a second that asked about, where do I take my money from in retirement? How do I most effectively pull it out? And there's a lot of considerations. You have three different buckets: your after-tax money, your IRA money that comes out fully taxed, and then your Roth money that comes out no tax. Three very different ways to start accessing or distributing your money. How do you do that the most efficient way? Well, the Roth is kind of the best vehicle for that, but because it's so efficient, you typically want to wait till the very end or the latter years to let it cook, if you will, and grow as much as it can because it comes out tax-free. Then you have the two other areas, your IRA money, your qualified money. That's 401k money, regular IRA money. If you had a SEP at work, a simple profit sharing, those are all it's all qualified money, and it comes to you and it's taxed in retirement. And then you have your after-tax money, or what would be in a brokerage account or a savings account. And that is taxed too. If you're making gains and you're buying and selling, you can create or generate capital gains. But those rates are qualified dividends. You're receiving dividends. Those are typically a more tax favorable way. So the worst place to take money, where you want to limit or be judicious with, is your IRA money or qualified money. If you have after-tax money, you can pull from that in a very specific way, where you're pulling money out and strategically looking at areas that maybe haven't made a ton of money, that are, let's say, flat or even negative. And if you pulled from that particular slice of the pie, you could effectively be taking back your own principal without having to create any sort of tax consequence and keep your tax bracket really, really low. In fact, this is also something I've been writing about and researching. You can have all the money in the world in retirement, and if it is, you can control, think about being able to control your ordinary income. If you're 64 and you have not qualified for Medicare yet, and you've got $1 million sitting in the bank and $1 million is IRA money, you don't have to take the IRA money out yet. And if you don't take it out, you're keeping your ordinary income as low as possible. And you only do what's called return of principal, or you do qualified dividends, and you keep your overall tax rate low. You can go to KFF.org, which is the Kaiser Foundation, and look to see for their healthcare calculator. You may be able to keep your income low enough, even if you have a couple $1 million, you could keep your overall income low enough so that you even qualify for healthcare that could be $1,000 a month, could be supplemented all the way down to a couple $100 a month, $100, $200 a month, if you are able to keep your income or your ordinary income low. So it's a really important piece of financial planning. We talk about investments all the time. Investments are critical to the equation. But this distribution of how I take my money is so important, because if I can keep my tax rates low, there's so many benefits to that. Not only can I keep more of what I bring in from an investment standpoint and keeping my tax rates low, my capital gain rates are lower if I stay in certain tax brackets. So if I'm in the 15% tax bracket or lower, my capital gain rate, long-term capital gain rate, is zero. Now, there's obviously that becomes a more complicated equation as you take more and more gains. But if you're in the 15% tax bracket, until you bump above that, long-term capital gain rates are zero. Talk about efficiency. You could qualify for you could have millions of dollars and qualify still for healthcare that's supplemented. You can have a silver or gold plan and still pay very little if you're able to keep your ordinary income really low for a number of years. And I've seen many families do that. So there's a lot to think about when it comes to financial planning. Anyway, here on the show, you can call us about anything, all the above, which would be whether it's lump sum or pension, whether it is looking at do I take a monthly amount or do I take a big lump sum from my employer? They're offering it to me. I have to make a decision in a couple months. Whether it's a home purchase, annuity, I have a question about, hey, I have an annuity or a mutual fund or an ETF. How should I allocate my thrift savings plan or my 401k plan or deferred comp plan? Or maybe you have just money sitting around in cash and it's not doing anything. What are some options that are really still really safe or low, low, low risk to still get a much better rate of return or higher interest? Interest rates are higher. There's ways to do that now. So anything of the above or all the above, give us a call here in the studio. The number 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 is the number here. We'll take your calls and questions. Or if you're outside of Georgia, the number 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's just 1-800-972-8255. When we get back, we'll open up phone lines are open now, and we'll take your calls and questions. Again, 404-872-0750. And you're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB. All right, awesome. We have so many good calls ready to go. They'll be in the 10 in the bottom of the half hour. Randy, hold on for us. Bud, Lori, Robert, Cindy, hang on with me. I got to tell a quick story. Storytelling Sunday. This is a story about new whip Whitney. And when I say new whip, it's because cars, I guess this is a term, it's old as new again. A car is called whip because back in the day steering wheels were first introduced to the automobile back 100 years ago, let's say, it was called a whip because whips were used to control horses drawing a buggy. So since the steering wheel controlled the car, it was referred to as a whip. Hey, you got a new whip, means car. Great. One of my coworkers, Whitney, recently had this experience that this is a really good lesson of how easy hassles, how we can ease the hassles of being in a car accident. So Whitney and her 7-year-old daughter, they're headed to church. This is only a couple weeks ago. On a Sunday morning, I don't know if they were listening to Money Matters or not. They're on Peachtree Street and Piedmont and Roswell Road when they collided with another car. Some guy did an illegal U-turn. Boom. Then while, so luckily she was saved. Nobody was hurt. Whitney was fine. Her daughter's fine. Good. But her BMW SUV was totaled. Now, she shouldn't have a WSB to begin with. Not a happy retiree car. That's a whole nother story. But then her insurance company told her that the policy that she had only gave her 1 week or 7 days worth of a car rental. So she's a single mom, having to get to work, having to get Whitney, to her daughter, to school. And they only give her 7 days to take care of all of this. 7 days is quick. The last car I bought, it took me a year to figure out what I was going to buy. And it's expensive. So she said, well, what should I do? Where do I need to go? So when she came to me, I actually had been working on a project with Capital One, of all places. Not a credit card. I'm not Samuel L. Jackson or Jennifer, whoever, Gardner. But using their auto navigator tool. And I've been working with them. So I said, oh, Whitney, this is great. It's basically this digital tool that can help you find a car quickly because you need to do this within like a couple of days. So think of this auto nav tool, or I call it auto nav, it's auto navigator, as a kind of a blend of a virtual car dealership and a bank all tied into one without having to walk into the dealership. And it gets you ready to buy quickly. It lets you view 13,000 different dealerships and quickly close a deal. So using auto navigator, New Whip Whitney was able to find or pre-qualify for financing and buy a car in about a week. In fact, she found her new ride on the same day, her new whip, on the same day that the insurance company declared her BMW a total loss. And I actually wrote about the story. It's at westmoss.com using this auto nav. So if you think about getting a car, interesting way to blend finding a vehicle and doing the financing kind of all in one. If you go to westmoss.com, it's on the homepage, WESMOSS.com. Go to westmoss.com. I think it's the second story right on the homepage called... Leveraging technology to make the most out of your time and money. So leveraging technology to make the most out of your money. The story of New Whip Whitney. More Money Matters in your calls straight ahead. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Gosh, we have a lot to cover. A lot of phone calls. Let's just go right to the phones. I don't know if I'm going to get to the story of Tidy Up Tessa. That might be for next weekend. We've told enough stories today. Goldilocks and the Three Bears and how that relates back to this economy. New economic numbers out this week from the Jobs Report, Bureau of Labor Statistics. Show that things are we went from, hey, are we rolling over as an economy to, hey, things are back to this lukewarm area, which is fine. That's what we want. We don't want economic data to be too hot. We don't want it to be too cold. We want it to be somewhere in the middle. Hence the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, the porridge in the middle one, or was the best. And she was saved. She lived through the story. And that's why that's exactly kind of where we are now in the economic cycle. Not too hot, not too cold. And that's a good place to be. We're going to go back. We're going to go to the phones here. Let's just start with, where do we go? Let's do rapid lightning round. We're going to go to Lori first. Lori, what's going on? How can we help?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a question for you. I'm just wondering, I have my Roth. My husband and I both have Roth and traditional IRAs and rollovers and things like that. But in my Roth right now, it's completely bond funds. So my question is, because I know you talk about saving your Roth IRA and spending it last, and I'm wondering, should I leave that in all bonds? Because it's part of my 60-40 blend. We got 60 in stocks, 40 in bonds, and that's part of the 40 in bonds.
I think that this is splitting hairs between good and better. The fact that you have your overall asset allocation where you need it to be is good. So you have, let's say, and I don't care where it is, as long as you have the allocation that works for you and your risk tolerance and you're okay with the volatility that comes along with 60% in stocks, but then you have the buffer that is the safety and the conservative investments for income on the other 40%, and they offset each other, and it reduces your volatility, and it makes you be able to sleep well at night. That is the first fundamental thing you have to get right. And it sounds like you're doing that. So that is already good. I don't care if the Roth is in all bonds, all stocks. It doesn't matter to me, as long as you have the 60% in equities, that is the right balance for you. Now, so that's good. Better, though, Lori, is that if you're not going to touch the Roth for a really long time, I would say better would be that instead of having all bonds, which are your most conservative investments, I could make the argument that you'd want to have your more aggressive investments in the Roth because it has the longest term horizon. The longer your horizon, Lori, the more risk technically you should be able to take because you have a longer time horizon for things to go well. And you have less worries about the peaks and the valleys of a particular investment if you're not going to touch it for 15, 20, 25 years. And technically, that's what your Roth is really. It's your longest term asset that you're going to start to tap. So I would say what you're doing is good, but I think better to think of the Roth as maybe even your more risky bucket. So you might want to have your more conservative investments in your non-IRA or your brokerage account or your regular IRA and right. tweak the Roth to the contrary and make that more equity heavy would be potentially a better strategy. Now, you don't want to, if you have to make a bunch of adjustments in a non-taxable account that could create a bunch of capital gains, it might not be worth doing that. But within your Roth, remember, you can buy and sell anything. As long as you're not taking money out, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get a 1099. It's all kind of under the shelter of the Roth. So you could easily change that to some of your more aggressive investments in the Roth and not have to worry about tax implications. So what you're doing, I think the bigger picture is the most important. It sounds like you're getting that right, so that's good. Yes, I think it may be a little better to make the Roth money a slightly more aggressive or at least back to the balance that you already have as a thought. So thank you for the call, Lori. Wonderfully important question. And I think that it's a good example that these calls here, there are a lot of people out there thinking the same thing or have the same question. So I think your calls really help our overall audience. And calls make Money Matters more fun anyway. We're going to continue on here. We're going to, where are we going next, Crystal? We're going to Cindy in Atlanta. Cindy, what's going on? How can I help?
Hi. I'm wondering about taking my 401k money and putting most of it into an existing IRA. And would there not be any reason not to do that?
The only reason would be if you're 56 and you're trying to access retirement money, there is a big difference between the 401k and IRA. How old are you?
I'm 60.
So if you're already 60, you've crossed the threshold of 59 and a half, then right, there's no downside to putting money from a 401k or an old 401k into an existing IRA as long as it's a direct rollover. The money goes straight into the IRA and you don't actually take possession of the money and you don't get a check and then not deposit it quickly. If you get a check, you have to put it into the IRA within 60 days to make sure you're not taxed on it. Otherwise, it counts as a distribution. But as long as you're doing a 401k rolling directly into your IRA, if you like the IRA let's say it's a Fidelity or Schwab and you've got plenty of options, good low-cost investment options, that's what really matters here. And if that is the case in your IRA, then I would say absolutely it is very often a good idea, particularly now that you're 60, to go ahead and move the 401k money directly rolled over to the IRA. Cindy, thank you for the call. All right, we're going to keep going here. What's next? Let's say, where are we going next, Crystal? We're going to go to Randy. Randy joins us from Cannes. Randy, what's going on? Welcome to Money Matters. How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Thanks for what you do. Wes, I'm 53 and have begun looking at long-term care insurance. And as you probably know, there's lots of restrictions around it, limits, what you can do with it. I'm wondering, is it worth purchasing that or taking those premiums and instead investing them in a mutual fund, say based on the S&P 500, and letting that money grow for 30 years, considering they would give me flexibility to increase or decrease the premiums as I needed to, and that the money would continue to grow even when I began to pull money out in my later years. What are your thoughts on those two?
I've seen so many people get burned by long-term care that it's hard for me to really, it's very rare that I see long-term care as something that is good for families that I've worked with over time. The I would say long-term care, think of long-term care as almost a, there's a lot to unpack here, but the first thing I want you to do, and I think about retirement planning as income sources, how many different income sources can I manifest? Because if I have three is better than two and four is better than three and so on, I want as many different income sources as I can get. And by the time I get to be 65, let's say, when you're ready to fully retire, what I want to see is enough income streams, different ones, and then enough income, whether it's coming from your Social Security, your spouse's Social Security, maybe you have a pension, maybe not, maybe you have some rental income, maybe you're doing some part-time work once you retire, so it's maybe your hobby income, and then you've got all your different investment income. So you have income from dividends that are coming from stocks and interest that are coming from bonds. So you've got all and distributions that come out of closed-end funds and REITs and all these other things. So now you've got all these different income sources. If you get that to a point, and this is what this so often when I'm helping families, I'm doing planning, we'll get to a point, we'll say, okay, if I look out at age 70, you're going to be, because of your assets and because of all these other, maybe they're all small income streams, but they all kind of, they start to add up to a pretty big monthly income. And it's, let's say, $6,000 a month forever, $8,000 a month forever. That to me is your long-term care insurance. Without you having to go buy or spend money on an insurance product that we know is they've been wrought with underfundings. I mean, that's, I would say if there's one reason that GE is no longer in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's because their bungle of long-term care. They lost something like $9 billion on a bunch of long-term care policies that they sold that they charged the wrong premiums. They took a massive, massive financial hit. And it's hard for these companies to really understand what the true cost of a family's long-term care is. And what we've seen is that they've just massively increased premiums and prices so that, to me, it's pretty rare to see it worth actually paying the premiums for something that is a rather uncertain asset into the future. Now, so I just don't like it. I'd rather you fund it through your own various income sources that you're setting yourself up for retirement, because you really need to go to a facility if you're 82 or 8 or 91 and you've got this all these other income streams that are coming in, then that technically is your long-term care insurance, your own financial planning. So I would default back to your thought of, if I can invest the same amount of money and I think about my broader financial picture, that's your, in my opinion, that is your true long-term care. Now, that's just my opinion. But the one caveat I would say to that is that if you are trying to protect your the bulk of your assets really for your heirs, then, and you've got plenty of money to spend on long-term care premiums, and if it's not a big deal to you to spend $3,000 or $4,000 a year, I don't know what the number is depending on your situation. Maybe it's $3,000 a year, maybe it's $5,000 a year. It's gotten so expensive. If you can still afford to do that, then if something happens to you in your 80s and you've got to go into an expensive long-term care facility, then you have effectively insured your assets from being somewhat depleted over time for your heirs. So it's almost a luxury, Randy, the way I look at it. If you can really afford it and you're not worried about, if you're pinched by long-term care insurance, I don't think you necessarily want to do it. I think you want to create your own overall income plan that will do it for you. If you have the money, though, and you get long-term care insurance and something happens to you and or your spouse, then the long-term care insurance will supplement and you will have to reduce your assets a lot less. So it's really almost for your heirs is how I look at long-term care insurance. But that's my opinion on this. There's no right or wrong perfect answer, but that's how I view the long-term care industry and whether you do it or not.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was very helpful. And the premiums are all over the board.
Yeah. What are they quoting you? What are some of the prices per year?
The average is about $2,000 a year. That would pay out $6,000 a month for about 3 years.
Yeah. So again, if you can afford it, it's just, I think of it as more for your heirs and a little bit of peace of mind. And $2,000 isn't It sounds palatable. That's just per year. But then again, what gets me on so many of these policies, I've seen so many families say, oh, I had long-term care, but now the premiums are skyrocketing.
Yes.
Or even if they're locked in, the company in 15 years comes back and says, well, we wanted it to be locked in, but now we underestimated the cost, so we can't make good on the promise, or the company starts to have financial issues because they overpromise. So it's a really slippery slope, and just be careful. But that's at least my take. Randy, I got to run. Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday, man.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, same questions that we just took on the air. We do that all day long, every day throughout the week. Happy to do so. You can find us on the website at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's a contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. We'll get back to you within 48 hours, and we're happy to do so. More Money Matters straight ahead. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on Sunday morning. We've got a prize pack we need to do here. So the number for the WSB weekend prize pack is 404-741-0750. We're going to go third caller with Crystal Wheeler here manning the phones. And let me see if I can go into, I had to take a photograph of the prize pack in order to read it. And the iPhone is so complicated. There's so many things. You go into the photo app. It's like this year ago, from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, for you. Here it is. A pair of tickets to see Celine Dion on her Courage tour. Her Courage tour. Saturday, January 11th at State Farm Arena. Oh, it's January 11th. Oh, this is Saturday, January 11th, 2020. So it's in the new year. Wow, this is far out into the future. This is awesome. At State Farm Arena, tickets go on sale Friday, April 12th at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com. But it looks like the prize pack, you're going to get a pair of these tickets to her Courage World Tour. The number 404-741-0750. And yeah, we don't have time for another call. Thank you for your calls. If we didn't get them today, we'll absolutely be able to do we'll go back to the phones next weekend from 9 to 11. So thank you for being with us. As a recap of today, we said the top three things we need to know. Goldilocks, the economy, it's a good thing. It means it's not overheating. It's in a good spot overall, but it's not faltering, at least at this point. And we saw that from the jobs report. We had unemployment rates held steady at 3.8%. The weekly, the work week, rose ever so slightly. We gained 196,000 jobs. February was revised higher. Wage growth moderated, actually fell a little bit back to 3.2%, kind of a healthy rate, not too hot, not too cold. So all these data points rose slightly, held steady, moderated. Those are all Goldilocks words. On data, that's arguably the most important and impactful data set that we get. That's jobs report. Other data that we saw that was starting to get cold and scary, getting better as well. Mortgage applications for Americans to buy a new house, to new homes, just ticked higher. If you look at vehicle data, new vehicle data, lightweight vehicle sales, autos stabilizing, going back up a little bit. The yield curve, the whole scary thing about the yield curve inversion, that actually got a lot better the last week or so. So we've seen some what were flashing signs of not so good economically have gone back into the pretty good camp. And that's where we want it to be. We don't want it to be hot, too hot. We don't want the economic data that's too cold. We want it to be Goldilocks. Just right. So this economy can plow further for longer. Thank you for tuning in to WSB Money Matters. You can find me and the team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.